Man, I get so proud every time I turn on that TV and I see the pride of Northeast Ohio, the pride of St. Joe's High School, and the pride of Ohio State. And when I think of one word to describe our next guest, it is pure class, and he is Clark Kellogg. And right now, he is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Clark, how are you, my friend? How
Hello,
are you
Clark. Doing?
Hey, Andy, Dan, good to hang out with you guys, and appreciate the kind words. I'm grateful and thankful to be part of one of the great sporting events on the calendar, but more thankful to be a Northeastern Ohio native and a Buckeye resident, man. So thank you.
Clark, I was worried for you last week, and I know you're knee-deep in college stuff, but during the high school basketball tournament last weekend for the boys, which, by the way, is now seven divisions, if you didn't know.
I know. I've kind of kept up from a distance, yeah.
There's a kid named Quinn Kwesniak from
Cornerstone
Christian.
Yeah.
Dude, I thought he was going to go for your record of 51 last weekend. I'm like, oh, Clark could be in trouble.
Well, that would be a great guy to break it. He's had a remarkable career and just a phenomenal shooter. Obviously, I know the Kwesniak family from my time at St. Joe's and stay in touch with Babe and keeping track of his boys, and really proud of Quinn, man. He's had a phenomenal journey and has handled himself really, really well. So excited to see all his success.
He is not scared to shoot from anywhere on the floor. I mean, anywhere.
Yeah, you got to let it fly when you can stroke it like that. There's no reason to be hesitant when you've got that stroke. Let it fly.
Well, I mean, that's what I felt like watching Alabama. That was like a whole team of guys that had a stroke going, holy mackerel.
Oh, man, that was so remarkable. I mean, they had not shot it well from three coming into the tournament. And in the tournament, the first two games, I think they were 13 to 38. And you knew at some point the dam was going to break because they take a lot typically. And they usually shoot a reasonable percentage. And I've seen it countless times throughout my time in the game, over 45, 50 years that I've been attached to basketball in some form or fashion. And guys that really can shoot it or score it when they've had a little bit of a rough stretch, man, when they break out of it, it's usually a volcanic eruption. I mean, it's not a quiet breakout, you know, and a guy like Sears, who had been struggling for his normal percentages, that basket got big real fast, and it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome to see them break that record the way they did. And he wasn't by himself. I mean, shoot, Youngblood made a handful. Aiden Holloway made five or six, I think. So it was a full team onslaught from the three-point line.
Yeah, Alabama went 25 of 51 in that game. BYU went 60 of 30 in that game, taking 81 threes in a game, Clark. Is that good for basketball that we're shooting 81 threes in one of these games?
It is. It's basketball, Dan. I mean, that's the nature of the game. I mean, the math says three is more than two, and if you can get quality looks for good shooters, I mean, you're trying to win, and you're trying to do it as efficiently and expeditiously as you can. The three-point shot is part of that equation. Now, I don't like running to the three-point line in transition when a layup is easily available, but some teams do that. I like the ball to go inside. But those threes they were getting, both teams, were typically off push-ups in transition or off paint touches and penetrating and kick. I mean, I recall a couple of Alabama's threes that were just textbook ball movement after penetration, where that defense is in rotation and a ball can move much faster than people when it's hopping and you can't catch it. And if you can get it to a three-point shooter, short corner or elsewhere for Alabama, then that's good basketball. When that thing moves and you get quality shots for good shooters, I don't mind if the greater percentage of them is from three.
Clark, why do you think we haven't seen that many upsets this year? It's been pretty chalk.
Yeah, you know, I was of the mindset, guys, probably a month and a half ago or so, that we might not see any number one seeds in San Antonio just because the quality of teams is so much greater now because of the transfer portal, and NIL certainly has a role to play in guys moving around. And then the COVID year, so teams are not only better, but they're also older, as a general rule across college hoops. So they're just more good quality teams. So I thought a couple of the number ones would be vulnerable, but that hasn't played out. And each year the tournament gives us what it gives us. What we can always count on is that it will deliver. And that doesn't mean you're going to have Cinderellas every year. It doesn't mean you're going to have chalk every year. You're going to have some mixture of all of that. And you're always going to have a story or two that comes out of nowhere, which is part of what makes it special. I mean, I like whatever the tournament gives us because I think it always delivers. The setup, 3 weeks, 68 teams down to one shining moment, the crucible of one and done, is a magical formula. So I'm fine with how it's played out. I think the top teams have played, performed at a high level, and therefore we just haven't had as many of the upsets that have occurred in prior years.
I don't like the distraction of the transfer portal right now. I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Oh, I hate it. Yeah. I mean, the calendar is jacked up, guys. It's not a function of – well, the landscape is totally different. Everything is reported. Everything is newsworthy, even when it shouldn't be newsworthy. That's just the nature of the world we live in now. Technology is wonderful. It's improved our lives. But there's another part of the sword that cuts negatively when everybody is privy to information and everybody is offering opinions and thoughts and commentary and debates, and fake news is considered real news. And so all of that contributes to the environment. But the biggest culprit, in my opinion, is the calendar. The transfer portal needs to be after the activity on the court. And hopefully that'll happen because it forces institutions. I mean, if you're about to take another job, the transfer portal opened a few days ago, which is a huge part of the lifeline and lifeblood of college sports now, particularly basketball, football, recruiting. And recruiting now has tilted primarily and significantly to the transfer portal. So when that becomes open and you're in the process of considering moving to another place, the institution that's hiring you is like, we need to get moving. Mm. We need to have you in place. And then the media wants you're still coaching a team. You're trying to stay. I mean, it's a mess. And the one way to help solve it, we've got a lot of work to do in this landscape of NIL and transfer portal. But one of the ways is to get the calendar right, to move this transfer portal opening away from live tournament action and get it behind it. And I hope we can do that much sooner rather than later.
Clark Kellogg joining us, CBS Sports. Watch him there, all the great tournament action going on CBS, TNT, TBS, all the way through the line all weekend and through the month as well. The other one with that was doing me in is it was so funny watching, Clark, that McNeese State make that run and Omar Khan in the front of it and everybody going nuts about that and how much fun that whole thing was.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah. Again, that's part of the special sauce. I mean, you never know when the sister Jean is going to show up, as she did with Loyola back in 18, the crying kid that was following Northwestern during one of their tournament runs, and Amir Aura Khan. As he goes by, that was pretty entertaining and fun, and it was organic. It was just something that bubbled up, and everybody enjoyed it and had some fun with it. And them winning their first tournament game in the history of the program was a nice piece to that story as well. So, yeah, those are the things that are always, in some form or fashion, a part of this time of year, and that's why it's such a special love.
But the other part of that, Clark, was Will Wade being in the middle of it, basically having that contract for him to go to, oh gosh, I can't remember what school it is right now. I'm blanking. Thank you. That whole thing was just, it was so weird watching him because you knew he was coaching his heart out. You knew these kids were coaching their heart out. But boy, that sitting there was just kind of a distraction from the tournament.
It does take away. I mean, there's no denying that. You would much rather have everything be focused and funnel towards what's going on between the lines. But the reality is the business of college sports, particularly football and basketball, is such that the business gets in the way. And it's not always neat. It's sometimes messy and chaotic and not ideal. But that's the reality that we live in. I mean, the coaching carousel is up and turning and churning, and that's not going to stop. That's always the case this time of year. you throw in the element of the calendar being out of whack, along with, you know, as far as it relates to the transfer portal, and these athletic directors want to get moving, and it is what it is. I don't like it. I don't think it serves the game. It's a distraction, and it needs to be corrected, and I'm hopeful that it will be. But it is. It's unsettling. It's this company, and it really takes away from what's going on between the lines.
Clark, can you take me behind the scenes a little bit, too? Your days are super long during this NCAA. Yeah. Just kind of, you know, for the folks that are watching you and the hours you guys put in during the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, you're putting in those hours all year, but we see Correct. It firsthand. So what's a typical day like
is
for
where
you?
It really get, yeah, the tournament is really where it gets amplified because you've got those 16 games in day one and two. So we get there usually about 11. We're on the air at noon, and then we're off the air 12:30 or maybe a tad before 1. We're watching games. We're doing half times and post games. I try to prepare not only my mind but my body for the grueling tournament time all year long. I'm watching games. I'm taking notes. I'm trying to learn 100 teams before Selection Sunday. So I've got a pretty good handle on all 68 by the time the bracket comes out. And then I'd be watching the games anyway, so now it's a matter of having a form and a template of preparation to highlight nuggets and notes about each team. And that's what I do. And I typically read it, write it down, so I can, and then review it so I can regurgitate it. And that's typically how I go about it. I don't keep track of the hours. I do whatever's necessary to be a good teammate for everybody that you see on the set with me and the tens and tens of people that you don't see, our researchers, our producers, our directors, our broadcast associates, our technical directors, our camera folks. I try to be a really good teammate for everybody by preparing to do my job at the highest level and then to be encouraging and uplifting to the other folks and to never forget the privilege we have to do what we do. It's fun. It is a job, but it's hard to call it work when you enjoy it so much. And so I'm grateful and try to approach my work and my life with a sense of gratitude and joy and appreciation all the time.
Clark, are you guys locked into the set during the day, or can you walk into a green room and start watching stuff a little bit? Because I got to imagine
we're pretty much on the set. There's a couple of different places. There's one other place where our executives will have everything, kind of a command center. I'll go back there. It's down the hall. We get up and walk around, but we primarily watch the games at our desk, and then there's a monitor that can be moved closer to our desk position, and then we can walk around in the studio. But, yeah, we're pretty much – we don't have a designated green room to go to watch the games. But we have a couple of places where we can get up and walk around and engage with the rest of our team. So, yeah, it's a fun group, great folks, and obviously the product is terrific.
All right, last question on the behind-the-scenes stuff. So the first time you found out you're going to be working with Kenny and Charles on that, when you guys came with the game, what went through your mind? And, I mean, it comes right through the TV as you guys are having a blast. Is it as fun as it, you know, you are?
Oh, clearly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We can't fake that. We enjoy each other. I've been back in the studio since 2014. And the first year or two, it took a minute to get comfortable in how we were going to navigate our specific roles. But after that, it's basketball. It's guys that have mutual respect and love and appreciation for each other. And we know entertainment is part of it, but informing is part of it, too. And everybody is free to be their authentic selves, which I think is part of what comes across on television and which makes it successful and enjoyable, we hope, for those that are watching.
Clark Kellogg joining us. CBS Sports is where you can see him for all the tournament coverage. All right, Clark, give me somebody you like the rest of the way. All right, who do you think wins this thing? And give me a fun one that you're keeping an eye on that might take over.
Yeah, you know, I picked Florida and Duke to play for it all on Selection Sunday. I haven't changed from that position. The interesting game for me is the Michigan and Auburn game, and even the Ole Miss-Michigan State game. You know, Michigan State, of all the teams in the Sweet 16, I think they've probably played the farthest below their standard and still advanced. So I think they've got room to really become more efficient, and they'll probably need to against Mississippi. But that Michigan Auburn game is interesting because of the seven-footers at Michigan. Kentucky-Tennessee is the third meeting between conference foes. And then Houston-Purdue is a bit of a home game for the Boilermakers. I know Kelvin Sampson not too thrilled about being in Indy, but his team is more than up to the challenge of handling that, in my opinion. So, yeah, but the Auburn-Michigan game is the one that probably intrigues me the most of the games we've got tonight.
All right, last question. Is Nick still playing overseas?
No, Nick is actually on the staff at Ohio State. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I did know. Oh, silly. Yep, I forgot. Yep.
He's hanging out. He's hanging out over there. COVID kind of short-circuited his playing career, but he had a good experience and is still in the game and doing pretty well.
And family's good. Anybody need to say hi to back in Cleveland?
All of the folks that keep a good eye on me and encourage me with their love and support. I haven't lived there in a long time, but that's still home and where it all began for me.
All right, Clark, we're always watching you. We love the fact that you always take the time to talk to us, too, especially during the NCAA tournament. And I know that when I was super green traveling the NBA circuit, you were always first class and just a great human being. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Clark.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it, Dan. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the madness, guys.
Right, we'll talk
to you.
That's
a promise, man. You as well.
Clark Kellogg.